good evening and welcome to the NFL Draft. Tonight, we officially welcome the next generation of players. So if you're ready, are you ready? Let's get it started. The NFL Draft is officially open.
Welcome inside the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast. I am Trevor Sikkema. With me is Benjamin Solak. On a beautiful Monday morning.
Hello.
A beautiful Monday morning in which the Tampa Bay Buccaneers are headed to the NFC Championship. I know. Weird to me too. Crazy how stuff has happened. We're going to talk about all four of the playoff games that happened this past weekend. But before we get to that, we got to remind you guys that this episode of the podcast is brought to you by 1010. 1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinct designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, exclusively launching on January 18th over at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. We had four playoff games this weekend in the divisional round. Rams-Packers, Ravens-Bills, Browns-Chiefs, and Buccaneers-Saints. The Packers emerged victorious over the Rams. The Bills were victorious over the Ravens. The Chiefs barely hung on in thrilling fashion over the Browns. And then the Buccaneers upset the Saints to give us a Packers-Bucks-Bills-Chiefs conference championship weekend. Ben, how do you feel about that being the matchup, these four teams being the matchup that we have to go up against?
I would have preferred Ravens Chiefs in the event that like the Ravens are playing well. Obviously, like I would not have wanted the Ravens that showed up against the Bills to face the Chiefs. But to me, this is pretty much optimal, right? Like this is about as good as like I think Brady potentially getting into the Super Bowl from the NFC to play in his home stadium is sick. Like, I think that's like a very fun narrative, especially with it being up against Rodgers.
Right.
That quarterback matchup and how well Green Bay is playing. And then certainly, obviously, you wanted the Chiefs to be in the AFC Championship game. And if not for, you know, my appreciation for the Ravens, how that team has been built, some of the players on it, especially Lamar Jackson, you would want them to be facing the Bills. You'd want the Chiefs to be up against the Bills. Josh Allen making the change that he has made, Brian Daboll leading the offense that he has. I think we got two really, really great games in the NFC Championship game. Have you seen the line for Packers-Bucks?
Ooh, no, yet? I haven't. I have not seen any what of the are opening
you,
lines.
Right, so in Lambeau, what's your guess of the opening line?
I would say that the Packers are favored by either like 2.5 or 3.5, something like that.
3.5.
Okay, there we go. Nice, nailed it.
3.5 points for the Packers. Yeah. It's probably up to 4 already at some spots. It's that this Bills Chiefs. I don't want to say like Bills Chiefs is an easy game to understand because it's not. But Bills Chiefs is going to be let's race and score points.
Right.
You know what I mean,
if Mahomes is available,
which I believe he. I mean, like obviously with concussions, you never really know. But
right,
like,
right.
You know.
I mean, I think that obviously everybody's sitting here on a we're recording this on a Sunday night, so we don't even have Monday morning news. But like. We all are, I think, just believing that Patrick Mahomes is going to play next weekend. And I would be the first to say, like, yeah, Patrick Mahomes is probably playing next weekend. But, you know, this is a very ambiguous injury. There's a lot of mystery here. He could legit have a really bad concussion. I mean, if anybody who watched that game watched Patrick Mahomes try to stand up after getting the hit, which was like a really awkward hit. It was almost like he got choked out rather than getting hit hard in the head. But if anybody who watched him try to get up off of the ground knows that like that was serious, and they took him into the tent and then immediately took him to the back and they ruled him out of the game, and that was a huge game, right? It's not like it was like, oh, you know, it's no worries, they're playing the Browns, they're going to win anyways. I mean, like that game came down to the very end, and so not having Mahomes almost proved to be extremely costly. And so I don't know, I watched how he was after taking that hit, and it makes me think like, damn, I certainly hope this doesn't linger on him, because Bills Chiefs, we have talked about this before on this show, is going to be a fun game. This is going to be fun as hell if we get Mahomes in there.
Yes, and I think the Mahomes, Clyde Edwards-Helaire is a question mark. Like it would be disappointing after the run up this game has gotten if those guys are unable to go and you feel like the Chiefs aren't at full capacity. But I agree with you. I think that Bills-Chiefs is going to be a ton of fun. It's going to be high scoring. No matter what, that game's not going to be over until halfway through the fourth at the earliest. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to be like a 16-point deficit. And you're going to be like, well, I mean, this will be a game here. You know what I mean? And, sure. And so I think that you've got – that's going to be a ton of fun. Tampa-Green Bay is where I think it's really going to be interesting to see, because this is where you've got the Packers defense, which have been playing better over recent weeks, the Tampa defense, which has – not only settled in, but had a tremendous game against the New Orleans Saints. I don't know if we want to start there. 30-20, Tampa wins. Tampa plays, I think, like solidly on offense. Tampa's able to run the ball a little bit well, but you got to circle four turnovers.
Right.
That's the name of the game. Huge. Generate three picks on Drew Brees. High quality plays by Devin White and Sean Murphy Bunting, which, like, into the game, if you'd been like, hey, who have the Saints circled? I would have been like, oh, Devin White and Sean Murphy Bunting.
I mean, you're not wrong.
Yeah, like, where did that come from? So, tremendous. Murphy Bunting was awesome in the slot. Really, really important. And then Devin White obviously had that very quality zone-dropping pick. Mm-hmm. They spot-dropped against Drew Brees, and they lost 38-3. And we said, you can't do that against Drew.
No, of course not. Yeah.
And they didn't blitz him all that much. They were still comfortable. We said, we're going to drop guys into coverage. They played tight man a lot more. They played cover two man. They played straight cover one. So they played more man and really tried to lock up guys early. But they weren't like, let's get Brees off the spot. They blitzed a reasonable amount for Todd Bowles' defense, you know?
Right.
They were confident in their guys beating the other guys. And they were able to deliver. So huge performance from that secondary, which when they play well, not so much the pass rush for Tampa. When that secondary plays well, that's where that defense really, really good. That's the best defense left in the playoffs now. The number one DVOA, the number five DVOA defense in the season. Now the best defense remaining in the playoffs. They see Green Bay, who obviously, you know, the Rams defense was barely a speed bump for them. We need another big performance like that, especially in man coverage against Green Bay here, against that offensive attack, if Tampa's going to get past Aaron Rodgers.
Well, they're a very young group, and so they can play with their hair on fire, if you will. You know, like, if this young secondary, oh, we get to bring up the momentum word, gets to, like, play with some momentum. I mean, like, Devin White had him fired up, and after that first turnover, it just felt like they were pouring it on. Like, after that first turnover, if the Bucs can get one of those kinds of turnovers like that, it just feels like the intensity multiplies immediately. And I know that's the case for a lot of different defenses because you start playing with a lot more confidence, but holy cow, this just seems to turn the tide so much for this Bucs defense. Because, you know, you could see in other instances, like in the first half, for example, I thought that Sean Payton was calling a really good game, and I thought he was manipulating guys decently well. And so it's like you get the inexperience, you get the youth of the secondary, and you're kind of manipulating a little bit. They get that first turnover from Sean Murphy Bunting, which is huge, but then it was really the Devin White turnover, which just absolutely took them to the moon with confidence, and that defense locked down in the second half. After the Saints scored a touchdown on their opening possession of the second half, in which things were still pretty back and forth, like nobody had really taken over that game because this went to the half 13-13. The Saints' next few possessions went fumble, forced by Antoine Winfield Jr., punt, interception by Devin White, interception by Mike Edwards. And, like, those were the final possessions of the game for the Saints. They just absolutely locked them down. And we also have to shout out new friend of the pod, legendary friend of the pod, Carlton Davis, Buccaneers corner.
I never wavered. Had Carlton Davis like a top 30 player, and I freaking knew.
Who ran to Twitter afterwards just to call Michael Thomas slant boy.
Okay. Full context here.
Oh my gosh.
At WarDamnStool, which is the Auburn Barstool account, tweets out, Carlton Davis has Michael Thomas in his back pocket, zero receptions through 55 minutes, hashtag draft season. Of course, Carlton Davis came out of Auburn in the 2018 NFL draft.
Correct.
And has been tremendous as the Bucs' starting outside corner this year, really the best season of his young career. He's not tagged. All right.
This is a quote tweet,
which means it was not saved in the drafts either. It just means my man was at the locker room before the reporters got dropped in. I guess the reporters don't get dropped in now because of COVID. So he was just at his locker in the locker room, pulled open the timeline, somebody probably tagged him in this. Maybe he follows this account from time at Auburn and says, you know what? After just dominating Michael Thomas for a whole game, I need to remind the people what the good man Michael Thomas is called. How he's known in these streets. Oh, Slant Boy. Slant Boy. That's all it says. Oh my gosh. I've never been so happy in my entire life.
I'm crying.
If you earnestly call Michael Thomas Slant Boy, you're a friend of the pod for life. For life. He's a locked on NFL drafter forever.
Michael Thomas in this game, 4 targets, 0 receptions, 0 yards. So that's why Carlton was going after him, because Michael Thomas, obviously wide receiver 1 for the Saints, prolific passing attack. He put up a crap ton of catches, a crap ton of yards, a crap ton of touchdowns over the last couple of years because they built the offense around him. You know, there was obviously the joke that came out with Chauncey Garner-Johnson and Michael Thomas getting into an altercation on the practice field. That wasn't this year, right? It was last year? I think it was last year.
Oh, that was this offseason.
Was it this offseason? Okay, so this offseason, and a fake report, I think it was a fake report, came out and said that Chauncey Garner-Johnson called Michael Thomas Slant Boy, and so that's where the origins comes from. And for, you know, we hear on the podcast, Stan, certain things unconditionally. Athletes who sprint to Twitter immediately following their game to talk smack, we Stan. Unconditionally.
Unwavering. Should still be reporters on the field.
Yeah, right. And he's like, hey, yeah, no, I'm going, I got to get to my phone. I got to get to the timeline to talk shit. And that's what Carlton Davis did. That's why he's a friend of the pod forever. Mm. In all seriousness, though, this game, obviously the 4 turnovers tell the story. Tom Brady threw for less than 200 yards in this game, okay? They didn't have a 100-yard rusher.
Right.
Cameron Brate led this team in receiving yards with 50. Chris Godwin had 34 receiving yards. Rob Gronkowski had 14. Antonio Brown had 10. Mike Evans had 3. They scored 30. Ben, they scored 30. I can't tell you how many times.
Short fields will do that for you.
No, of course, right. And obviously, like, the turnovers go a big way into this, and I get it, but I can't tell you how many times this season I feel like I'm watching a Bucs game in the second quarter or the third quarter or the beginning of the fourth quarter or whatever, and I'm like, man, like, you remember the times that they don't execute. You think, man, they wasted this possession. They should have done this. They should have done that. And then all of a sudden at the end of the game, boom, 34 points. And I'm like, how did we get here? This team has barely executed to what I would say is like a top-tier level. And yet they're scoring 30 every single week. Every single week they're scoring 30. So they've been on a roll lately over their last 5 or 6 games. And really, the game in which I feel like everything absolutely clicked for them was that Green Bay Packers game early in the season. And they scored 38. Week after that, they scored 45 against the Raiders. And it's like those 2 weeks back-to-back, that's when I felt like this Bucs offense was really clicking. And so there is just, I feel, so much margin for error because there is so much talent on this Buccaneers offense that they're going to be able to score a lot of points any single week. And that's what makes this matchup against the Packers very, very exciting, right? Because the Packers, absolutely clicking. Aaron Rodgers is playing at an MVP level. They have a lot of their talented guys solidified in their roles, healthy. And it's going to, this has the chance to be an absolute shootout next week in Green Bay. We will see. It's actually supposed to snow, I think, a little bit next week, which will make for exciting television.
I would like to see it.
At least into the pregame. But that was the biggest takeaway for me, is that, yes, the turnovers absolutely helped. But as we take this Saints-Bucs game and look into it next week, the Bucs really had a lot of instances that you could point to that they did not execute well on offense. And yeah, they scored 30 points. And that's the kind of team that this team is becoming. And look, going into the year, I didn't think that they were going to be a team to reach the Super Bowl. And this kind of complimentary football, where no matter what happens, whether it's the defense picking things up or the offense picking things up, but whatever it is, at the end of the game, they're scoring 30 points. That's what makes you a team that can get to the final game of the year. And so that's where I feel like the Buccaneers are right now.
So let's look at Saints real quick, right? Because other podcasts focus on the winners. We focus on the losers. Welcome to the NFL Draft. The New Orleans Saints have absolutely no cap space in 2021, right? As has been long discussed, no team has invested more into maximizing their winning window than the New Orleans Saints. They have poured resources into this team. Offensive line, defense at all three levels. They have made it to the NFC Championship game once.
Damn, and is that true?
From 2017 to 2020, I should say.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Right. They were never able to
obviously,
get...
Obviously, they won a Super Bowl, so like that wasn't... Yeah. I didn't think that was the case, but I knew what you meant in this winning window. That's wild that they only made it to the NFC Championship game once.
Yeah, and so what you're looking at is $100 million in cap space. $100 million over the $175 million floor, which may get bumped up. 195 people have talked about. They can do some restructuring. They can designate Drew Brees to be a post-June 1st and defray his cost over 2 years, and they can try to cut Taysom and restructure.
Brees is going to retire.
Yes. He's going to retire, but that barely solves your problem.
You're right.
The problem is you're looking at, they haven't made... Yeah, no, they lost in 2018. They made an NFC Championship game. Okay, I'm right. I know what I'm talking about. Okay. They've got Marshawn Lattimore.
Yes.
They've got Marcus Williams. They've got Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead. They got Malcolm Brown, Nick Easton, Emmanuel Sanders. Not Nick Easton. Emmanuel Sanders. All these guys are upcoming, are free agents in 2020 or in 2021. This team is going to experience a significant talent drain, and they're going to do it intentionally because Brees is going to retire. They don't anticipate being able to bring in new talent, make a big quarterback signing, so they know they're going to play Jameis and try to be good with him, and maybe they'll win 8 games, but they don't anticipate being in a competitive window over the next 2 years as they swallow these cap losses. And so
go ahead, I'll let you finish.
You know, will they draft a quarterback at 25? I think or 26 is the immediate question. I don't think so. I think that they're probably going to try to see what they can do with Jameis, and they're probably going to try to see what they can do with Taysom. I don't
but
think this can be quarterback
contract. You know that, right?
Well, right, but they've expressed that they want to bring him back.
I don't know how much I believe that. I mean, like, I'm not saying that couldn't happen, but I believe that Sean Payton is one of those head coaches that certainly looks at his quarterback situation, and he says, like, look, if we can upgrade it, we can upgrade it. I mean, look at what he did over the last 2 years. I mean, he had Drew Brees as his quote-unquote QB1, but he's over here developing plays for Taysom Hill. He's over here signing Jameis Winston to a league minimum. So I'm not so sure that, like, Jameis is 100, like, going to be the guy going into next season. I really don't. And that opens up a giant can of what do you do, because if you go into next season with Jameis, I think the Saints could put up a lot of points. I think they could still put up a winning record. Yeah, I was right the first time. And I still think that they could be somewhat competitive with Jameis Winston. But do they... It's going to be weird to hear these words, but like, do they want that? Because they know the inevitable rebuild is coming. They have to move on from a lot of these players. They've dug their grave for the last 3 years...
Right.
Now they have to lie in it a little bit. It could get better. It's not as dire as maybe it seems on paper right now. We know that the Saints and a lot of the good teams in the NFL are wizards of what could be their money situation, their cap, and their roster, and who's making what, and who's making it where, and blah, blah, blah. So the only thing that I'm saying is that do the Saints want to go 8-8 next year, 9-7 next year, or with Jameis Winston, or do they want to start the purge of some of their guys now, try to establish the core that they want for the next rebuild? Probably know they're not going to be great next year, but maybe next year you've got a little bit more cap space, you have more of that core carved out, and you might be picking somewhere in the top 12. You know, like, you might be in range of another quarterback. You might be in range of really kickstarting this next rebuild. And so I know that teams don't love to do, especially good winning teams, don't love to just, like, rebuild like that, but...
Right.
This might be a team that looks at it from the other side of things and tries to get ahead of the curve.
So when I look at team needs for New Orleans, understanding that I don't anticipate them having an easy time extending in-house talent over the next couple of years, you look at corner, where they might lose Janoris Jenkins and Marshawn Lattimore. Again, I don't, like, you know, Saints are like, of course we're going to re-sign Lattimore. I'm sure you're going to try.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong.
Right.
I look at linebacker, where they still have a hole besides DeMario Davis, who's obviously on a big extension, traded for Kwon Alexander. I'm not sure he gave you what you want. Alex Anzalone obviously was a featured target for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers passing offense. You look at linebacker. You look at wide receiver, where, you know, okay, Tre'Quan Smith, Deonte Harris, Emmanuel Sanders, that's what you're dealing with right now underneath Michael Thomas, Michael, the O-Slant boy. So you've got depth issues there, and maybe even, you know, your wide receiver one's not necessarily showing up the way you want him to in playoff games. And then I also look at places like offensive tackle and places like edge, where Trey Hendrickson's up and upcoming big money free agent. Mark Stavenport's going to be a big money free agent, or not necessarily huge money, but he's going to be a potential big free agent next season. Tron Armstead and Ryan Ramczyk, both are only under contract through 2021. Tron Armstead shouldn't be taking a discount to stay with New Orleans. Ryan Ramczyk should not be taking. Ryan Ramczyk should be played as the top right tackle when he hits the market. Does New Orleans have that money for him? Do they have money for Tron Armstead, who's playing like the best tackle in the league right now? Armstead should get the heck out of there. Go play for Kansas City. Go win a Super Bowl. You know, especially if there's no Breeze and they don't immediately generate a good quarterback contingency plan in 2021, why would you try to stay? I'm like, the same. They're going to be reloading. You are not a reloading player, Tron Armstead. So I look at 26, and to me, the Saints can go A ton of different ways, and B, should go a ton of different ways, looking for best player available, acknowledging the fact that they need to find cap flexibility somewhere. So if they see a player at 26 who they think could be a starting corner for them, they should draft that guy, because if they get it wrong, okay, but if they get it right, you can potentially save the money on the Lattimore deal by letting Lattimore walk. Somebody's got to walk from this building is the moral of the story. Right. And that's like, I gave the Saints Jalen Mayfield at offensive tackle, because in the last five drafts, the Saints have drafted an offensive lineman or defensive lineman with their first pick. They have built through the trenches. And I was like, they're doing this because they have no starting tackles under contract in 2022. Saints fans are furious with me. Buddy, somebody's got to go. You do not have, you are $100 million over the cap, and you've got massive extensions waiting.
That's the thing, is it's not just that the Saints are $10 million over the cap or $20
million. $100 million.
The Saints right now are $100 million over the cap. And again, there are Saints people out there who know the team and know the future moves that they might make better than us, who would go like, well, actually, they'll make this move and this move and this move, and then it'll get down a little bit. But the rubber will meet the road at some point. This Saints roster, as it is right now, will not exist in 1 year from now, 2 years from now, heck, maybe even 3 months from now. Something will have to change here. They clearly did all of this to make the most, as now I'm also not saying that this was the wrong move. You go all in on a winning window. They had one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time playing in what was the twilight parts of his career. And in 2017, he was great. In 2018, he was great. 2019, it was a little bit lower. 2020, obviously, it was lower than that. But like, you go all in when you think you can go all in. And they've been close. They have put themselves in position to do that. So selling your soul for a winning window, look, I'll never hate on that, especially when you have the right formula to do it. I think the Saints have the right formula to do it. But now, you got to pay up. You've done this, and it's time. Someone has to go. I don't know who it is going to be, because I don't know exactly how they are going to manipulate this number. But the talent that they currently have right now, as what you and I have said, is one of the best rosters in the NFL, that time is coming to a close very soon, whether it is this year or next year, that we all come to kind of realize that the Saints are in a different spot.
So the moral of the story for me is, when I look at Saints draft plans, I don't circle a position. I circle top player on the board, because they're going to lose talent in a lot of places. And so you just have to continue doing what you've been doing under Mickey Lewis, Loomis, Jeff Ireland. Draft well.
Yeah.
And that's going to, that more than anything else, young starting caliber talent will solve your problems quicker than any sort of cap manipulation, any sort of smart, management of this position. You got to get young talent in the building. They've done that well. Continue to do that and take your lumps now with the contracts you've signed. That's where you are for New Orleans.
I do want to talk about the Browns-Chiefs game next, but before we get to that, when it comes to getting or staying in shape, nothing feels as good as that feeling of accomplishment. Hitting your fitness goals and feeling great about yourself. You can talk about hitting your new fitness goals as well for this upcoming year. Echelon can help you get there. Echelon offers the next generation of connected fitness bikes, fitness mirrors, rowing machines, and their new Echelon Stride Smart treadmills. No matter what your favorite activity is, Echelon gives you a fun and challenging workout from the comfort of your own home. The EX7S is Echelon's latest state-of-the-art innovation that takes cycling to the next level. Their world-class instructors will motivate you through thousands of daily live on-demand studio classes, always available whenever you need them. And unlike their competitors, Echelon is affordable for everyone. Plus, one membership lets up to five members work out all at the same time. Go to echelon.com, echelonfit.com/lockedon. That's echelonfit.com/lockedon. Cleveland Browns made it very interesting against the Kansas City Chiefs. The final score was 17-22, but there were a couple instances in that game where you thought the Chiefs were going to pull away, and then they didn't quite make it happen. And then earlier in the game, oh man, the Browns were marching down the field, and Rashard Higgins, he sees the pylon, he reaches out, and Sorensen hits him kind of helmet-to-helmet, and the helmet-to-helmet didn't get called. The ball goes out of Higgins' hands and goes into the end zone. Touchback for the Chiefs. If that would have turned around, this game could have been 24-22 Cleveland Browns. Obviously, after that touchdown would have happened, things would have played out differently within the game. So, of course, there is a butterfly effect involved, but that was a massive point in the game in which there was a huge swing in what could have happened. Ben, actually, I'll put you on the spot a little bit. How do you feel about this rule? The Rashard Higgins
right.
reaching for the goal line, it gets knocked out, it goes into the end zone, and therefore it is a change of possession to the mm-hmm. other team. How do you feel about this?
Because I'm an NFL media member.
Yes.
It's a bad rule and it should be changed.
Uh-huh.
Because I'm a Locked On NFL Draft co-host.
Yes.
It should be changed by making it even worse. Safety. On the offense. Chiefs get 2 points and the ball back.
I love it.
All right? Listen. Touchdown. Okay, give them 7. Give them 12. Just, oh, you think this is bad? We can make this even worse. Okay. Like, here's the thing. Mm. Do I understand why a fumble by the opposing, by the possessing team that occurs outside of the end zone, but then goes within the end zone or occurs within the end zone and ends up going out of bounds counts as a touchback? Do I understand why that's the case? No. But I also don't know what it should be like pro Genesis. Like, I don't know what it should be before I know the results. Like, what makes more sense than a touchback? Nothing. I don't like. You're gonna give them what? First and goal at the one?
Right.
No.
Right. Because right? I think that people. Yeah. Yeah. Keep. I won't cut you off.
You're gonna wipe away the whole play. Like, what is 70-yard touchdown? And he fumbles it at the one. You're gonna go, okay, 2nd and 10 at the 30. Like, you can't. That doesn't make any sense.
Right.
No. So nothing. There's no good solution, which is why I say make it better by making it worse, because that's just funny to me. Yeah. Right now it's a touchback. It doesn't make any sense. I'm sure there are people who have good solutions out there. Feel free to add us with them. I'll like it if I think it's actually good, but then I'll make a snarky comment to imply that I don't. But I don't, like, it sucks. But every, like the Jason and Devin McCourty co-owned twin account, which, by the way, as an aside, have two separate accounts, guys. But that account tweeted out, I believe.
Twin stuff I don't mess with, man. Like, they just exist on a whole different level. People who are, like super close twins, I can't even mess with it. I can't even understand it. I just let them do their own thing. So joint Twitter accounts, joint Facebooks, whatever. Joint bank accounts, I don't care. Do your thing. I can't relate.
All right. That, as an aside, I believe it was Devin who tweeted and said, like, every single New England Patriots player or once Belichick coach player watching that play was screaming at the TV, don't reach out. It is the rule. Mm-hmm. It is known. Mm-hmm. And Belichick, who's a kind of good coach, teaches his players it's not worth the risk. It literally, like, will go for it on 4th and inches. You know, like, maybe it's worth the risk on 4th and inches, but it's not worth the risk on 1st down, 2nd down, 3rd down. We'll go right. for it. You know what I mean? Don't reach it out. And so that's, you know, you should, as a coaching staff, take Rashard Higgins to the sideline and say, coaching point here, we're not going to reach out for that. And then you should, you know, Cleveland Browns going through culture notes, going through our decisions, going with our position coaches next year, Kevin Stefanski should say, all right, we learned our lesson. We're not reaching for those anymore. We're going to go for those on 4th down, and we're not going to make those gambles going for the pylon. So I can't remember what down it was. So if it's 4th down, please excuse me. But that is the rule, and you should operate around it, and you should know not to reach for the pylon, because running that risk is just too great a loss.
I think the people on Twitter who were ganging up on the rule, screaming that it was the worst rule in sports, I think that that deserves a little bit of pushback, because where obviously I think it's kind of egregious that you give possession to a team that did not earn the possession, right? I mean, like, you can force a fumble anywhere on the field, and if you as the defense do not recover the football, you don't get the football unless it's in the end zone. Now, I will say this too. End zone has different rules, as it should. This is the goal. This is where space is at a premium. This is where, like, you are truly matched up against somebody and the rest of the field doesn't matter. This is the goal line. This is everything. This is how you win in football. Like, this is exactly what you were trying to do. So the end zone area should be treated differently than other areas on the football field. So I agree with that. I think the rule should be different, but I agree with you in the sense that, like, okay, it's a bad rule because of the end result of what the rule is currently. The only way I know to, like, make it better is that you probably punish the offense for reaching out, but, like, give them the ball at the 20. Like, I think that there is math out there that would say, okay, if mathematically you award them the football on the 15-yard line, then the percentages of them getting back into the end zone are this versus making.
You're really
going
to turn this over to the nerds, huh? You're like, nerds, find out a way to make
this
equitable.
I think this would make this part. This
would
make sense.
We've been training them
for
this moment. I think we've been entertaining all of their theories about football. No, I'm just playing.
I think that there is a probability here that makes sense to where you keep the field goal percentage up high. Because,
oh, Carlton Davis just tweeted again. Sorry, I have notifications on. Keep going.
What did he tweet?
Let's find out.
Okay, live on the pod. We need to, was it another slant boy? Did he respond to Michael Thomas?
I don't have an island. I got a graveyard. Skull and crossbones.
Okay, all right. We stand with Carlton Davis. Big fan of the podcast. Huh. I think that there is a probability place where you can put the ball to where you still have a very high percent chance of at least getting 3 points. Because remember, too, you caught the football or you were carrying the football. You got it down to the 1 yard line. That should be worth something to me. Like, you got it almost there. Now, do you deserve points? No, not that play if you fumble the ball into the end zone. But I think that there is a place where you could spot the ball to where, whether it's second down, third down, or fourth down, whatever it is, you then have a high probability of making a field goal, and yet the odds of making it a touchdown are still certainly, like, relatively lower in that aspect. I don't think it should be a turnover. So I think the rule is bad because it changes too much of the game because it gives a possession away. But I don't think the spirit of the rule is bad. I just think it could be deployed better.
Right.
So that's my big thought. Honestly, Sorensen absolutely battering rammed Higgins with his helmet, the crown of his helmet, down straight onto him. So that also, like, not being a reviewable penalty is dumb. I guess I'm thinking in my head, I'm like, what's the drawback to this? Maybe because they don't want to slow the game down a bunch, because there's a bunch of bang-bang plays in the NFL where you're just kind of, like, going helmet to helmet, and you're going to be like, oh, why didn't you review that? But that one's a big deal. That one's, like, hard to miss. Like, if you're a ref and you don't, maybe it's just the refs have to be better on that one. Maybe that's the solution. They just have to see that, because that was absolutely helmet to helmet, and that should have been illegal use of the helmet, and that should have negated it anyways. But yeah, that was my interpretation of the rule. Chiefs won the game. Mahomes is hopefully back next week. That'd make for a fun Bills Chiefs game. They look pretty unstoppable. Well, not unstoppable, because the Browns were doing a pretty good job. But they were actually doing a good job of what we were saying in the podcast last week of running the ball and eating up some clock and really handling things. Baker, I thought, played fantastic, man. Baker has taken a lot of crap this year, and I thought that he really did play fantastic. Let's talk about Cleveland, though, in the same way that we talked about the New Orleans Saints. When you look at this Cleveland roster, let's talk about some draft prospects that they could, or at least some positions that they could really go after.
Yeah. So New Orleans, not in a great spot. Cleveland, it's a pretty good spot. Projected $25 million on the cap for 2021. They have a upcoming Nick Chubb and Baker Mayfield duo contract situation. This is the last year Chubb's going to be cheap, 2021. And then Mayfield will have the fifth year option in 2022. And then he'll no longer be cheap. So they've got those guys. that they have to handle on offense. But you look at the way that their wide receiver room is built out with Beckham and Landry both secure for the next couple of seasons. Hooper's obviously on the big deal. And then their offensive line. They got to give Wyatt Teller some cash after 2021 as well. But that starting group, Conklin, Treader, Betonio, Jedrick, they're all secure. They're all locked in. This offense looks great. You probably want to add another wide receiver for Odell injury insurance plus just, Jarvis Landry had a Miami Landry game today, a running back Landry game, as we like to call them. He had like 8 catches for 23 yards. Right now, you're when Odell's going down, certainly you're finding your explosives from like Donovan Peoples-Jones and Rashard Higgins, who's currently a free agent. Even if you bring Higgins back, I think you want to find somebody who you can rely on more for your explosives at wide receiver 3. Of course, you don't get too many wide receiver snaps in this Stefanski offense, so it may be something that you debate. That's the offense, though. It's largely set. I mean, also, some offensive line depth, perhaps. Some wide receiver depth. We should be good. The defense. Not as much. Olivier Vernon, free agent. Mm-hmm. Larry Ogunjobi, free agent. B.J. Goodson, free agent. Carl Joseph, free agent. So you need, at all three levels, improvements and potential early draft picks. The defensive line and the pass rush is, I think, the most concerning thing to me. You gave Myles Garrett the mega deal. Now you got to make sure that he's not doubled every single doggone snap, which, right, don't get me wrong, he's going to get doubled most snaps. But if you're presenting Adrian Claiborne,
you got to make him pay.
Right, exactly. If you're presenting Adrian Claiborne, Joe Jackson, Curtis Weaver, Sheldon Richardson, Jordan Elliott as kind of the rest of your pass rushing group, that's a failure, in my opinion. So edge and pass rushing defensive tackle is going to be an early consideration for this team. Their linebackers were a liability this season. Sione Takitaki, Mack Wilson, Jacob Phillips, none of these guys are the answers. I'd like to see them spend significant money on the linebacker market. However, it's not a great year to need a linebacker. So again, Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, who we talked about, Zaven Collins, who we talked about, is going to be on the first-round board for them. Denzel Ward is their corner one. He's going to have his fifth-year option in 2022. I mean, if they want to try with Greedy Williams and then re-sign Kevin Johnson, sure. But again, corner two. Eric Stokes, J.C. Horn, sure. Asante Samuel, they're going to be on the board. And then at safety, which we've talked about, they have Grant Delpit coming back, hopefully from injury to be an impact high starter for them. But Ronnie Harrison, Carl Joseph, if you re-sign Joseph and you go in with Joseph, Harrison, Delpit, I think you'll be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But they're on all three levels. This defense needs help. And the instinct with the way the offenses are in the AFC, looking at Buffalo, looking at Kansas City, looking at what the Chargers might be able to be, I'm looking at what Baltimore might be able to be, the instinct is going to be, oh, we have to keep building into our offense. We have to keep on making sure our offense can compete. And you do. But when I looked at this game with them against the Chiefs, and obviously the Chiefs only scored 22, they had a couple missed field goals. Mahomes went down in the third quarter. It could have been a lot worse. I was just so worried about this secondary. That's where I think you need the most resources. Yes, you want your offense to be able to compete. You want to be high scoring. I get that. But this defense right now, to me, is not a playoff caliber defense. I don't think it would be able to make it through 3 playoff games. And so that's where I would like to see them pour resources, especially early in the draft. Secondary and pass rush, got to get this defense up to snuff. Offense will be fine. Yeah. System's good. Quarterback is good. Running game is good. Offense line's good. You'll be okay.
Yeah, and they've got a lot of picks in 2021. They got a first. They got a second. They got 2/3. They got 2/4. They have 1/5, 1/6, and then 2/7. So, you know, you mentioned some of the areas that were they might want to get some depth. Like, for example, wide receiver. You have Odell Beckham Jr. coming back, so it's going to be Odell, and you're hoping that that's obviously a massive boost to the playmaking potential that you have in your receiver group. You've got the tight ends that you like. You might be losing Njoku. Njoku is a free agent, is he? Is he a free agent? Or was he just unhappy? Was he going into the fifth year of his deal?
Free agent.
He is?
No. He has 2021. Yeah. Yes, he has 2021.
Okay, so he's got the fifth year of his contract, but he was unhappy, so I don't know. He might be out of there, even though it felt like they were using him more as the year went on. But you've got room with those 2/3, the 2/5. Oh, no, wait. Maybe they don't have 2/5. Maybe they only have 1/5. Now I'm confused on because it's got different.
They sent a fifth in the Teller trade.
Mm.
I think they only have one.
Well, I lied. Never mind. It's all awful in Cleveland. Burn it down. No, I'm just kidding. So they've got enough depth picks later in the draft to really address some of that, you know, defensive, like interior defensive line, wide receiver, maybe if you want to pick up a secondary guy. But first and second round, even third round as well. I think that those are the big targets for upgrading the pass rush in a premium way and then potentially getting another corner on the outside. I think that if a linebacker you love gets to you and he could really help out that team in the middle, that also makes sense. But I agree. I don't think you're touching offense until, I guess, the third round probably, because this wide receiver class is so good that I think that they can wait until the third round and still even get a really great wide receiver three in that range while upgrading your two sides of the defense in the pass rush and the pass coverage that you could do in round one and round two with Cleveland. So that's good. That's kind of where I am with that.
Right.
Let's get to Ravens Bills. We got to get to Ravens Bills. Wait. Before we get to that, got to talk about the best protein bars on the planet. Carlton Davis himself, I believe, right before he shut down Michael Thomas. I don't know. This could just be like total rumors. That I don't know, but this is just, you know, what I heard.
But we're gonna say it on the podcast like it's fact.
We'll right, but I mean, like, you know, this is sources say that he ate an entire box of Built Bar protein bars in one sitting before the game, and then shut down Michael Thomas. Went on to go on Twitter and reference him as Slant Boy, and he did so with the caramel brownie flavor, which is one of the new six flavors, which go into the 18 incredible flavors that they have over at BuiltBar.com. Folks, these are the best protein bars out there, plain and simple. Low in calories, low in sugar, high in protein, high in fiber. They're great for keto diets as well. They've got 19 grams of protein in them, 180 calories. They're fantastic. They taste great. They're great for your macros. Go over to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON. That's all caps, one word, LOCKEDON, and you will get 20% off your next order. Use that promo code LOCKEDON, 20% off over at BuiltBar.com, and you too can shut down Michael Thomas in a playoff game. Also, before we get on to Baltimore Ravens and Buffalo Bills, you guys hear Ben and I give our takes on the games, who we think is going to win. We've already mentioned one of the spreads in Tampa Bay and Green Bay. If you think you want to put some money on the line, if you think you know who's going to win, there's only one place that has you covered, only one place that we fully trust. That is betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account over at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Whether it's the last few NFL games we got, college basketball, NBA basketball, NHL, MLB when they throw the first pitch, whatever it is, they got you covered.
Wait, do you think there'll be combine props this year with the regular combine? Oh, frick me.
Whether there's combine,
is my favorite thing to bet.
I know, that is fun. Well, you can check it over at betonline.ag. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you will get a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Bills, Ravens. Ravens, only 3 points. Big yikes. Lamar picked a bad time to throw his first interception in the red zone, didn't he? That was a backbreaker to Tron Johnson and that Buffalo Bills defense. But I think it was a fun game. I mean, it was a back-and-forth game, certainly, until then. It was very close. You didn't know exactly who was going to win it, and that felt like the backbreaker for the Baltimore Ravens. Josh Allen, 200 yards passing, only one touchdown. But Stephon Diggs, 11 targets, 8 catches, 106 yards in that touchdown. John Brown also, 62 yards as well. I think the big story, though, it was the Ravens' rushing attack, and it was how the Buffalo Bills were able to neutralize them pretty well. Gus Edwards, 42 yards. J.K. Dobbins, 42 yards. But those were the tops on the day. Lamar Jackson had 9 carries for 34 yards. And passing, he only had 162 yards passing, no touchdowns, one interception. So they just were, this just was not the same kind of dominant run team for the Ravens in 2020 that we saw in 2019. And I just think that they didn't have enough juice in the passing game to make it happen. And so with the Bills moving on to the AFC Championship game and the Baltimore Ravens now fully in draft season, let's talk about some areas that you would love to see the Baltimore Ravens drafting and targeting here as we get into the offseason.
Can't pass football, man. Can't pass football. Lamar Jackson is, you know, oh, Lamar Jackson is 1-3 in the playoffs. Wow. You know, it's, oh, Lamar, he struggles to throw the football outside of the numbers. Wow. Okay. Cool. He's played 4 career playoff games. In 3 of them, a running back has been his second or first leading receiver. Patrick Ricard got the 3rd most targets on the team against the Titans last week. That's a fullback, Trevor.
Hey, fullbacks. We got to give him props. This is a fullback advocate podcast. We stand fullbacks.
They gave Mark Andrews 11 targets.
That they
four
did.
Receptions,
yes.
For four against the Bills. This was
they gave
four
they
receptions
gave,
for 28 targets.
They gave him 11
for 28 yards.
They gave him 11 targets. He got 28 yards.
Fourth out of 20 yards. Do you think it's Kelce? Right? They gave J.K. Dobbins five targets, three receptions for 51 yards.
I've often said best tight ends in the game, Mark Andrews, Travis Kelce. You flip a coin.
And it's frustrating because it feels like when they had Hurst and when they had Andrews, and obviously
Nick Boyle,
you know, Andrews played pretty well. They were like, all right, we're just going to get rid of Hurst. We're going to make Andrews a 120 target per year dude. And Andrews was like, I can't do this. I can't catch. He has to drop a game. You know what I mean? You just compare the Bills threw the ball every single snap, which we don't talk about enough. But they had 11 targets to Stephon Diggs and 11 targets to John Brown. The Ravens had 11 targets to Mark Andrews, seven targets to Marquise Brown. And then it's J.K. Dobbins, Willie Snead, and Miles Boykin. That plus their offensive line isn't even built to pass protect. They're out here running standard five-step drops with Lamar Jackson behind Tyree Phillips, Patrick McCurry. What are you thinking, Greg? You can't be doing this.
Yeah, Greg.
Lamar did not play well against the Bills throwing the football. It took three sacks. He had the horrible interception where he just read Taron Jackson wrong. Can't be making those plays. Shouldn't be making those plays as a year two quarterback, or as a year three quarterback, excuse me. Certainly shouldn't be making those plays when you're a league MVP. That's a bad play. Lamar needs to become better passing the football in a vacuum. However, you really struggle to say he's the biggest problem with this passing game. This team should invest in offensive linemen who are capable of pass blocking and run blocking, and they should invest in wide receivers significantly. I wanted to give them an edge in the mock that I just produced. I wanted to give Azeez Ojulari. I thought it'd be a great fit. But then I watched that Bills-Ravens game. I said, frick, I can't not give them a receiver.
Who'd you give
That's them? The spot they put themselves in. Chris Olave. At 32, oh, yeah. I'm trade back and get Olave, which I think it makes sense.
Oh, nice.
But they're going to be all... we have to be vertical. Marquise Brown, Mark Andrews, got our deep passing game. You just need somebody to catch the ball 8 yards. You need somebody that Lamar can be a high volume target. They're not going to move on from Greg Roman. But Lord, if you get like a good passing game coordinator in there, if you get somebody who knows what he's doing, designing concepts off of play action, off of pre-snap motion, you get yourself a Chris Olave. You get yourself a Kadarius Toney, somebody you can move across the formations, and you can put in different alignments, you put him in the backfield, get creative, easy ways to get him open. You don't even need him to be high volume because he's great. You have such a cheat code with the players you can put in that backfield that you can, the Bills just dropped everybody into the box. They were blitzing six, they were blitzing seven, daring the Ravens to have somebody beat them in space in the passing game. They don't have anybody.
Right.
So all you got to do is get Chris Olave and put him in the slot and have him run an option route. For goodness sakes, it's not even complex. And they don't do it because Greg Roman doesn't like to design passing games. And so I think that the Ravens are very good with Lamar Jackson. They are going to extend Lamar. Lamar is going to deserve that extension. They went 11-5. They were great down the stretch. He is going to be the cheat code of the running game for the next several years in the league. And they will be capped at the divisional round of the playoffs. Mm-hmm. Because good defenses in the playoffs, when it's not about putting stuff on film, when it's not about disguising tendency, when it's not about getting guys in here, when it's just about beating the team across from you and surviving another week, they're going to put 9 in the box. That's what it was. It was 9 in the box and say, we're not scared of Marquise Brown.
Right.
And you have to invest in wide receiver this season.
I want to get to some next gen stats about numbers in the box, facing eight plus in the box. But I don't have that pulled up in a second because I wanted to say this stat. Marquise Brown was tied for the NFL's lead with 39% of his team's total air yards this year. Okay. He was tied with DJ Moore and Calvin Ridley, who had slightly more than him, but they were all tied at 39% for the most in the NFL. So Marquise Brown dominated his team's air yards as much as any wide receiver in the NFL. He was one of three who was tied at 39%. He is only one of two wide receivers. The other was Darius Slayton in a not good passing offense with Daniel Jones that you don't want to be compared to. He was one of the top 13 players who had above a 32% for that number, who had less than 900 yards receiving. Marquise Brown had 39% of his team's air yards at 769 receiving yards. That's bad.
Suboptimal.
There ain't a wide receiver in this group that has less than 1,000 yards receiving. And he didn't even have 770. And all these other receivers who are getting that much of the air yards all over 1,000 yards. He was just him and Darius Slayton in the top 13. And that is not the company that you want to be in. I also want to point out that Gus Edwards saw 8+ in the box, the 6th most in the NFL. And where is J.K. Dobbins? J.K. Dobbins was, I think, 17th. So they had two running backs that were top 20 in the NFL in terms of seeing 8 in the box. I mean, there's just people know what the Ravens are going to do. And mm-hmm. there's just not a lot there in terms of threat, whether it's running, whether it's passing. And I agree with you. I think that wide receiver is huge for them. I've often found that the Ravens are a very creative spot to give a lot of different draft prospects to, especially in the first round. You can give an offensive lineman and beef up that offensive line. You know, Kyle Pitts has been a fun match when he's been able to get there. You know, you could talk about some guys on defense that they could add, because you could look at their free agents and you could say, okay, they could add this guy, that guy. Maybe a safety could be in line for them in the top 50, whether it's in the first or the second round. But I think it all is second fiddle to offense. You have to get more playmakers in there. You've got to be able to extend the passing game, and they just can't do that right now. They don't have the guys to do it. I think that it worked out really, really well in 2019, and I think that losing Ronnie Stanley and having to shift some guys around on the offensive line, I mean, obviously that hurt them this year. They were not allowed to be as dominant as they were in 2019, but I also think that it was just a year later. Like, it was just a year later, and we're clearly seeing from the defensive tendencies, whether it was 8 in the box or whether it was them just forcing the ball to one receiver because they didn't have any other options, they became one-dimensional. Not one-dimensional in the sense that they couldn't do anything else, but when they were planning to do one thing or the other team knew it. There wasn't any threat outside of exactly what that they were planning. So I agree with you. I think that expanding the passing game in some way, shape, or form, it's got to be priority number one for Baltimore, or at least really high. Let's quick touch on the final game, Los Angeles Rams, Green Bay Packers. Packers obviously won that game 32-18. They're going to the NFC Championship game, and now the Rams, they enter the offseason, and as we found out on Sunday night, they're going to lose their defense coordinator because Brandon Staley is going to the Los Angeles Chargers to be their head coach. I don't want to get specifically into Brandon Staley, Ben, because little teaser, tomorrow's episode of the podcast, we're doing Team Takeover Tuesday, and we are doing the Los Angeles Chargers. I know we're going to get to the Falcons later this week. I'm going to make it up to you guys. But
tell other teams to stop breaking news on Mondays, and we'll do the Falcons.
That, and we had a listener reach out to me who said he was a big fan of the podcast, and he's leaving to go to basic training on the 25th of January, and he said he won't be able to listen to the podcast for a couple of months once he goes to basic, and so he's a diehard Chargers fan, wanted us to get to that, and so, of course, want to give him the shout-out, and I wanted to get to the Chargers before he left, give him a great send-off, do what we can. So we are getting to the Chargers tomorrow, so I don't want to get too much into the Brandon Staley thing, but let's talk about the Los Angeles Rams and what they need to do this offseason, because this is another team that does not have a first-round pick.
Who? Okay, so the Rams-Packers game, blankly, was just, like, Brandon Staley just got hired by the Chargers. I think Brandon Staley is a great defense coordinator. I like a lot what he does, but as we've said on this podcast many times, defense is about choosing how they, like, it's about saying, all right, if they're going to beat us, they're going to beat us by doing this. And Brandon Staley said, you know, we're going to give them underneath space. And if they can throw into the flats with perfect execution and beat us in the one-on-one tackling game, they're going to beat us. And that's exactly what they did, right? And that approach by Rodgers and LaFleur was humble. And said, it's hard to throw deep on the Rams. We're not going to try very much. We're going to try at a very good opportune moment late in the game and ice this thing with a beautiful Alan Lazard touchdown. But for 3.5 quarters, you know, we're going to sit on it. We're going to go slow. We're going to run the ball with Aaron Jones. We're going to control. We're going to move that ball down the field. Very simply, the Rams did not have a full operative quarterback in Jared Goff and did not have a full operative defensive home wrecker in Aaron Donald. This team, attrition takes away so many teams across the course of the NFL season. And the Rams, who were a really, really likable team, who I thought could go far, just didn't have enough health at their key positions, right, to be able to bring this thing home. You look at what the Rams are going to be able to do, and as you say, Trevor, number one, they don't have the draft capital to be making significant additions, offense or defense. And one of the reasons why what Brandon Staley was doing was so impressive was because the Rams – defense doesn't necessarily look like it's star-studded, right? I mean, you have Aaron Donald. Other than that, he was working with a lot of lesser-known names on the defensive line. Leonard Floyd is his deal is technically a one-year deal. He's got a automatic void on his 2021 contract, so I'm fairly certain he's not playing. He's not signed by the Rams. Like he's going to hit the free agent market. He had a great season under Staley, but you have to question whether or not Floyd's somebody who's going to continue to be a 9-10 sack per year guy if he's in a different defense. Obviously, we saw what they did at corner. Now it's the question of, are they going to be able to re-sign Darius Williams? Are they going to be able to re-sign Troy Hill? Two players who are upcoming free agents. How confident are you in bringing those players back and putting them in a new defensive structure and expecting the same caliber of play? So the concerns that existed with the Rams preseason, which were largely glossed over, or at least felt easier when Brandon Staley really turned this defense into a high caliber, top five DVOA, number one scoring defense, you know, snap in an instant. Those still exist. They need talent at inside linebacker badly. Troy Reader, Kenny Young, and Micah Kaiser, these guys were not able to make
I like Kenny Young.
I like Kenny Young too.
Okay, great.
We're not able to make the necessary plays against the Green Bay Packers offense. An improvement at off-ball linebacker is necessary. If they lose Floyd, their outside pass rushers are Terrell Lewis, Obanaya Okoronkwo, and Justin Hollins. They need an improvement at edge as well. Mm-hmm. There's talent needed on this team. And, of course, the ever-present issue of Andrew Whitworth's retirement, decline, or health. Obviously, he came back in an outstanding fashion for the playoffs. Remains, and they have to be able to secure their tackle of the future right now with Bobby Evans and David Edwards. That player is not on the roster. So I think your question mark is young tackle, and if they can make a really attractive pick in the 50s, we're able to get a guy like a Daniel Falele, you're able to get a guy like a Spencer Brown, able to get a guy. Do you think
Jax Carman can be there?
Carman's interesting. It's such a good tackle class, man.
It's got depth, yeah. You know, I agree. Right. It's obviously not the star-studded one that last year's class was, but right. there's some dudes to get, I think, on day two.
We think Dylan Radins makes it deep day two. Like he's the guy to me who's most interesting, but I've heard like he's got round one buzz or whatever.
I'm not sure because we're really kind of turning the page here and starting to get whispers of like what the league thinks of certain guys. I haven't heard a lot about Radins. I really haven't. So I'm not, I'm not really sure. I figured that he is going to be a top two round player, like whether it's a fringe first at the end of the first round or like somewhere on early day two, I think that that's where he's going to go. But to answer your question, I think that he has a chance. I think he has a chance to go to the Rams.
So you're looking at, I think, making one of those picks and securing the future of your offense. But you got to look at continuing to add talent to this defense. And remember, Rams also contract-wise are currently considered on over the ceiling for 2021, not in as nearly as dire a situation as the Saints were when we attacked them. But they're considered to be, I think, it's like $15 million over the 2021 cap. So you're also, again, at this time, looking at a team that's not going to be able to make significant moves. Not so much for contract mismanagement, though certainly Les Snead has also tried to maximize the window, but for the fact that COVID's drastically affecting the cap ceiling. So this offense is going to stay roughly the same. The Jared Goff contract, as people love to point out on Twitter, and by people, I mean me, it's not something you're getting out of 2021. It's not something you're getting out of 2022. So this is how good the offense is going to be. So it's going to be about running the football with Cam Akers. It's going to be about continuing to pour targets into Robert Woods and Cooper Kupp, who are going to be the foundational parts of this wide receiver room, right? Tyler Higbee's on his extension as well. So this passing game, this running game is set. Secure your offensive line and then start going after defense. So kind of a similar situation to the Browns there. The Browns just, I think, have more youth and more money. So kind of a little bit of a rosier projection, probably have the better quarterback as well.
Losing Staley really hurts them here. You know, because
Staley made a lot out of a defense that didn't have a lot of talent on it.
Right. I mean, when you looked at this defense, the big joke was like, okay, they got Ramsey and Donald and who else? Okay, well, they had Ramsey and Donald and who else and made it almost to the NFC Championship game, right? And so I think that Staley had a fantastic year for what they were doing in the regular season and obviously making a little bit of a run here in the playoffs, and losing him is a really big deal, because if you would have held on to Brandon Staley for an extra year, I thought that, yeah, you might lose a couple of people here and there on the defense, but you'd have faith in him to figure it out and really give you a competent defense enough for this offense to score enough points with McVay and with Goff to beat a lot of teams, or at least be in the hunt every single week. But now it's a little bit different, especially with not having a first-round pick and not having that luxury, because I would almost tell you that, yeah, Whitworth being up in the air is a big deal and it's something you got to monitor. Yeah, they could use an extra interior offensive lineman to help out that offensive line as well, especially for with the offense being the bread and butter of the team. But you, depending on who they lose, you almost have to go defense here, because I don't know who they're going to get to replace Staley as defensive coordinator, but I have a hard time believing it's going to be shoes that are filled exactly the same. You know, so the way that you would have to cope with that is you would have to get more talent. You would have to get something better on the defensive side of the ball that whoever comes in next can work more with, because you figure that that coach is probably not going to do as good of a job as Staley did this year. And so I almost think that, yeah, they've got needs on both sides of the trenches, and they've got some potential defensive needs at linebacker as well, some upgrades there, maybe an extra secondary pick if they want to change things around in there. But, like, I really do think defense is the way the Rams have to look with their first selection, especially with it only being at number, what is it, 57, something like that, in the neighborhood?
57,
like that?
I think. Like, yeah, it's around there. I know that it's probably changed a little bit because, you know, picks have moved around and teams are getting settled, but it's something around 57.
I believe that, moral of the story is, I believe that losing Staley almost forces this to be a defensive pick. Unless you just are really selling out to score a lot of points, and that's just like how you do things in 2021. But I think that with losing Staley, you are really surrendering a lot of what made your defense workable with as little talent. Sounds insulting, because of course I think they have a good amount of talent on the team, but I do think that they're going to need more defensive talent next year with whoever is coming in a defense coordinator.
Right, and I'll put it to you this way. When you lose Staley, I mean, it was probably still true that their number one edge as a team was McVay, period. But when you lose Staley, absolutely your number one edge as a team becomes Sean McVay. You're always going to be able to at any time pop off with 30 because of the way he coordinates, because of the way he coaches. You don't need to, you needed defensive help last year, and you were pouring day two picks into Van Jefferson and Cam Akers. You know what I mean? Like, you've done it now. Like this offense is got the young talent. It's got the veterans. Jared Goff is what he is, and you should know what he is and understand his limitations. This is your offense now. You've got to start to get responsible on the defensive side of the football. You don't have an edge there without Staley. Like, maybe McVay makes another home run head defensive coordinator hire, but I don't know if you can be banking on that. You have to bring in defensive talent because McVay is going to get your offense to a high level. He sets a floor just by how he coaches. That's, I agree. I think that they've got to go there as well. To me, it's always going to be, how many pass rushers can you add next to
Aaron Donald?
Yeah. Right. And you can make like the how many cover men can you add next to Jalen Ramsey argument. And I think that's fair. And I'm not sure how much faith I have in Troy Hill and Darius Williams kind of outside of the Staley family tree.
Yeah.
But to me, they're probably excited about Terrell Lewis. But like, if you're able to bring back Darius Williams because Leonard Floyd's going to cost you too much, then that's where I would want to go. I'd want to bring in Hamilcar Rashid. I'd want to bring in Joe Tryon. I'd want to hopefully hit on a day two rookie pass rusher, give me 8 sacks off the side like Leonard Floyd did, and continue to make things easy for Aaron Donald. Things are always easy for Aaron Donald.
Tyler Shelvin next to Aaron Donald. How do we feel about it?
I would like to see it.
All right, great.
Sebastian Joseph Day already has that job locked up, and he is at Strasburg. Great. Thank you for playing.
All right, there we go. 4 games recapped. Well, sort of recapped. The draft situations of the 4 losers recapped more than the games themselves. We get some exciting championship games. I agree with Ben at the beginning of the podcast. I mean, Chiefs-Bills is the AFC Conference Championship game that everybody wanted to see. And Even though I'm not sure Buccaneers-Packers was the NFC championship game everyone wanted to see, it's fun. It's exciting. You've got two teams that can put up 30 and 40 any single week. And, of course, it's Brady versus Rodgers as well. Tomorrow, it's Team Takeover Tuesday. You guys know that by now. And as we said before, we are doing the Los Angeles Chargers. So they have a brand new head coach, so we won't be spending as much time on the head coaching carousel. They obviously have Telesco as their GM as well, so they don't have a GM seat open, but there is a lot to get to with that roster. What do you do with the number 13 overall pick, and then how do you build this team around Justin Herbert? How do you build a winner? How's Staley going to do it? We're going to get into the details of that tomorrow. Until then, you guys keep it locked right here on Locked On NFL Draft.